I told my wife this would take
waiting
less
for
than
the blue light special. We ready, guys?
Yeah.
Ready.
Welcome, everybody, to the May 11th, 2015 meeting of the Senate Committee on Business and Transportation. We got a few bills to deal with today, and we are going to start off with House Bill 2614. James?
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2614A allows ports in certain types of special districts to dispense fuel at non-retail dispensing facilities, notwithstanding the requirement to purchase at least 900 gallons annually. Declares emergency, effective on passage. There are no amendments. There's no revenue impact and has a minimal fiscal impact.
Welcome, Representative, Senator, former Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman,
former
members
County
of the committee.
Commissioner. You've got the whole thing going.
I have had the whole thing just about going. For the record, Bill Kenemer, State Representative, and just nice to be back in the Senate for a minute. And I got a little simple bill for you, at least I think so, and a friendly bill. It comes from the Boring Water District, and there's no pun on that, although water tastes pretty good out there. But anyhow, it seems that for 2 years in a row, they didn't meet their minimum of 900 gallons of usage of fuel, and the card lock was going to, they were going to lose the right to their card lock. And, you know, in that kind of business, you need potentially 24/7 access, and it doesn't always work. And so with that in mind, I was contacted, and incidentally, their usage last year was 888 gallons. Yeah, that's 12 gallons shy. So it was pretty darn close. So we put the bill together, and special districts came to support it. And the bill was amended in the House to add ports, because we found ports also face some things, and 9-1 communication districts. I think it's a pretty straightforward, simple little bill. You'll hear support from special districts and from card locks, and I would encourage passage.
Okay. Questions? Representative? Senator Rod?
I'm just really impressed somebody in the House could subtract 888 from 900 and get 12. We're doing pretty good.
Well, actually, Sherry had it on the note card.
Oh, did she?
It was a close vote in the House. No other questions?
Can't talk
Representative.
That one.
Mr. Romaine and Landauer.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll take care of this for you.
That'd be fabulous.
Go ahead. Okay. Good afternoon, Chair Beyer, members of the committee. Mark Landauer here on behalf of the Special Districts Association of Oregon and the Oregon Public Ports Association. Just real briefly, the Special Districts Association and the ports support this measure. It will largely impact rural areas. Right now, the way the statute works, of course, Representative Kenemer mentioned the 900-gallon minimum in order to be eligible for a card lock. I just note that on lines 17 through 20 of the first page of the measure, those entities that purchase less than 900 gallons are permitted if they are for farming expenses or if they're purchased by a government entity providing fire, police, or ambulance services. Now, many of the smaller communities, namely cities, of course, provide oftentimes one of those services, so they're already exempted from the 900-gallon minimum per year. Of course, this doesn't apply to many types of special districts that don't provide fire or, for that matter, police ambulance. This measure is probably a housekeeping measure to some degree, because I don't know why so many of these special governments weren't allowed a way through to enable to be eligible for the card lock. Many of the districts that are mentioned in the proposed measure do provide some type of emergency response, and so having access to fuel at all times of day and night is really critical for them to fulfill their missions. And with that, of course, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Paul?
Mr. Chair?
You want to go first? Go ahead, Senator Monroe.
Well, either that or we could just legalize self-serve.
I think that's a bill later in the session.
Oh, okay.
We actually have part of that.
Did you have a question?
No.
Mr. Romaine.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Paul Romaine. I'm with the Oregon Fuels Association, representing the Oregon Fuels Association. We're in favor of the bill. Cardlock is just, it's not any cheaper than buying your gas out there. It's just a convenient way to do it. You get a monthly bill. Usually the station's open all the time, and you can have access to it. It just makes it a lot more convenient for people along the lines of self-service. Which we would support, but we also believe in the tooth fairy too, so we'll go from there. Thank you.
Questions about these gentlemen? Tim Thompson, you have a question?
No, I better not.
You had that look.
Well,
never mind.
Thank you, gentlemen. Is there anybody else who wishes to comment on House Bill 2614A. Seeing none, we will close public hearing. We'll open a work session. Chair moves House Bill 2614A to the Senate floor with a do-pass recommendation. Discussion on the motion. Is there any opposition to the motion? There is none. Susan? There is none. House Bill 2614A passes to the floor by unanimous agreement with the do-pass recommendation. And Senator Monroe wants to carry this one.
Oh, sure.
So we'll close on that. And who else have I got? Do I have
Gomberg coming in.
Oh, there we go. We will open a public hearing on House Bill 2687A. James.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2687A exempts persons operating registered farm vehicle from law prohibiting carrying dog or external part of vehicle. Applies to offenses occurring on or after effective date. There is no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact. We have a A4 amendment. It inserts provisions on how a dog may be carried legally on an external part of vehicle, including specified heights for sidewalls, tethering, and crating. On that amendment, there is no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact.
Welcome, Representative.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, I am David Gomberg from House District 10 on the beautiful Central Oregon coast. I'm pleased to be before you today to introduce this measure. It was originally requested by the Oregon Humane Society and came through the House, I believe, on a 56-1 vote. You've heard the summary. I'm just here to introduce both the measure and some of the other participants in the process.
Thank you, Representative Gomberg, Chair Beyer, members of the committee. We're here in support of House Bill 2687, as long as it includes the -4 amendments. And I am Sharon Harmon with the Oregon Humane Society. My apologies. Thank you for the coaching, as usual. The Oregon Humane Society is an independent animal welfare organization in Portland. We are not affiliated with any other animal welfare agency, including the Humane Society of the United States, the ASPCA, or anyone else that has a bigger name than us or smaller. We are independent and answer only to our local community. We've been a strong advocate for protections for dogs in the back of pickup trucks over the years. I've included in my testimony a recent case from April 29th of a dog who was launched out of the back of a truck and suffered grievous injuries. I spared you the pictures. You can look at them if you like, but you can trust me that they're graphic. Too often we have followed behind people who have dogs unrestrained and wondered how long will it be before that dog jumps out? How long will it be before he gets knocked over in his exuberance to bark at the next car over? When does he lose his footing and now I'm at risk of hitting him or causing an accident or being injured myself? I spoke with Dr. Don McCoy. He's a veterinarian, used to own the North Portland Animal Hospital in Northeast Portland. He was talking about how he followed behind a truck that had a dog that was tethered. That dog jumped out and was dragged, and by the time he could catch up with the guy, that it was too late for the dog. Probably the worst story I've heard of was a dog who was bounced out and went over a cat when he was going over a cattle grate and sheared off all four legs. I mean, we're not talking about small things. We're talking about an animal that leaves the bed of a pickup truck at any highway speed is going to be injured. There are exemptions in this bill for farm-plated vehicles, for agricultural enterprises. We've worked with the farmers before on this issue, and we're pleased to be here in support together on this bill. I don't want to speak for you, but I'm just so happy to be sitting here with the Farm Bureau on this issue finally after decades of trying to increase protections. We strongly support the bill with the Dash 4 amendments, and we hope you will join us in stronger protections for animals in the back of trucks. Thank you. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Hi. Hi. My name is Marianne Nash, here today with the Oregon Farm Bureau. So Chair Beyer, members of the committee, thank you so much for having me. I am here today. Obviously, we are supportive of the A engrossed version that you know just contains the exemptions for commercial agriculture, but had worked with the Humane Society on what is now the Dash 4 amendments over on the House side to ensure that there were the appropriate exemptions for, you know, ranchers that are out on the back 40 and need to be have their dogs kind of come in and out of their pickups while they're herding cattle and stuff like that. So, you know, obviously we're fine with the A version, but also supportive of the original agreement as well. So if there's any questions, I would be happy to answer them.
So you're good with the A-4s?
We're good with the A-4s.
Question, Senator Thompson?
On the A-4, so with this exemption, will they have to change? Will like a pickup back of a pickup truck? Will they have to add any extensions to get to the 46-inch height, or can they just jump in a basic standard pickup bed?
They're not 46 inches okay? high.
Nope.
Chair Beyer, Representative Thompson. Yes, but they have other options. They can use a crate. I live on Sobeys Island. I see many guys taking their duck dogs up the road. There are crates that are strapped down in the back of trucks. They don't have to add extensions, and the extensions don't have to be elaborate if they do.
So they do have to add extensions.
Yeah.
What's the standard height of a pickup bed?
I'm guessing they're about 20, 24 inches.
Or less. Or less.
Or maybe on a smaller pickup, but on a regular F-100 or something like that.
You also have options of cross-tethering. You know, the protections don't have to be elaborate, and they're commercially available.
But the answer is yes, you have to have extensions unless you want to tie them down.
Mm-hmm.
Just for a second. Senator Thompson, more?
Did anybody else have any questions? I might. Go ahead.
Senator Gerard?
How did you come up with 46 inches? That's an odd duck amount.
I think when you, I am just beyond belief incompetent today. I guess it's because I'm sitting here next to the Farm Bureau and we're in belief and I'm in support of the same bill that I'm just giddy beyond belief. Senator Beyer, Senator Gerard, you know, it seemed like a good option at 46 height to protect most dogs. There are clearly some dogs who could leap over that in a bound, but looking at the standard height, seems like a good mix.
That probably takes you to the roof of the pickup.
Yeah.
Close there, too. Maybe a little more. Are you done?
Well, I was going to ask one more question.
Go ahead.
I would just like you to restate that you're not affiliated with the Humane Society of the United States.
As requested, Mr. Chairman, Senator Gerard, the Oregon Humane Society is not affiliated with any national or local organization. We are completely independent, not affiliated with the Humane Society of the United States.
Not always in agreement.
Are you okay?
Correct.
I'm good.
Okay. Now, Senator Thompson.
Well, I just want to make perfectly clear. Farm, is agriculture exempt from increasing the height of their pickup? They're exempt from that.
Yes, Chair Beyer, Senator
And under
Thompson.
What conditions?
Well, the exemption, as we read it, is very broad. So you would not commit the offense under any circumstance, if you have an F-plate vehicle or you're engaged in commercial agriculture at the time you're transporting the dog. So that was the agreement. And I also, just to add a little bit of clarity, we'd be neutral with the Dash 4s and obviously supportive of the original A engrossed.
That's
right. So,
go ahead. You said F plate. So, I don't have a dog. My brother-in-law does.
Doesn't apply.
We're both farmers. We're both.
That's what the
our pickups
does.
Don't have F plates on
the
them. Our semis do. So
she
what?
Wants to add in the dashboards, which would,
how will police know that I'm a farmer and I got a dog in the back of my pickup?
So, Chair Beyer, Senator Thompson, and that was one of our concerns as well, because a lot of ranchers and farmers don't have F-plated vehicles. No. It's not actually terribly common, which is why we had negotiated for the engaged in commercial agriculture exemption, and I think that'll be, you know, obviously pretty fact-dependent, but I think if you're, you know, you're out in eastern Oregon or you're out, you know, driving from one piece of your property to another and you get pulled over and they say, oh, well, you have this dog in, I think it's pretty... You know, and even if you get the offense, you can show up at the court and say, okay, well, at the time I was doing this, and there's actually this exemption, and I'm okay. So I'm not saying it won't be, you know, it's not as easy as just looking at the F plate and saying, okay, you're exempt. But hopefully the police officers will know that there's been a change in the law, read it, and say, okay, well, what are you doing, and try to suss out, are you actually engaged in agriculture right now, or are you, you know, shopping at Safeway? Okay. So.
You done?
I think so.
I want to clarify. Does this, with the A4s, do these requirements apply to pickups being used by a farmer?
Chair Beyer, my understanding is it's engaged in commercial agriculture, so it depends on what they're doing, but if they are, you know, doing something that relates to running their farm, our understanding is that they would not be required to meet these the same precautions that, for example, if somebody has a pickup in the city and is not at all connected to agriculture, you know, they'd clearly be under the requirements. But if somebody's engaged in agriculture, out practicing their, you know, out checking cattle or out, you know, moving from field to field, they'd be okay.
That just convinced me to, I'll probably be a no. Please, we're going to leave. They originally exempted agriculture from not using your or not getting in trouble for using your cell phone, and that went away in a really short hurry. And I this is going to leave a lot of discretion up and uncertainty up to the law enforcement. So I'll probably be a no. I live in a farming community, and a lot of people do this. So.
Go ahead.
I just want to make sure that I'm on the same page here. But if I read the bill in the summary. The original bill gave the exemption to agriculture to have the dog untethered in the back. Mm-hmm. The Humane Society wanted the 8-4s, which puts some sidebars on it to 46 inches. That's pretty much what we're looking at, isn't it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Girard, our understanding of this would be that if you're in an agricultural, involved in commercial agriculture, or you have farm-plated vehicles, you are exempt from the provisions of cross-tethering, raising the height of the pickup, or putting in a confined, in confinement.
And Chair Beyer, Senator Rod, I can add a little more clarity. I think when the bill was very first dropped, it didn't have all of the provisions that the folks from the Oregon Humane Society had wanted. That's when we worked on if there was amendment language that could get Farm Bureau to neutral from what they had been looking for. Didn't move out of committee that way, but they approached us afterwards and said, hey, we're going to seek our original agreement when it came over here. And so that's and we said, yeah, that makes sense. We would honor our original agreement about how the law should look, even though we are, clear, Farm Bureau is perfectly okay with the engrossed version of the bill.
One more question. So
yes.
You had an agreement with Humane Society prior to it going through the House.
Yes.
And so you want to honor that agreement. I think you should honor that agreement.
Yes.
So, that's part of what we do here is come to an agreement. Okay.
Right. So, Chair Beyer, Senator Rob, we are willing to honor the agreement that we reached on the House side, even though that wasn't reflected in the A. Engross version, though we are comfortable with the A. Engross version.
I just think the term F, if you have a F-plated truck, is way overrated. That's usually on your semis and your one-ton rigs. Most farmers drive Chevy, Ford, all kinds of pickups, and that you don't put an F, you don't get an F plate on a pickup.
Yeah, I think I agree with you.
Yeah,
I mean, most of the farms don't have specialty plates, unless you're running a diesel. You
yes.
might, so you can use the pink.
Yeah,
and blue, whatever the color of the fuel is. Yeah.
So, Chair Byer, Senator Thompson, that we had that same concern, which is why we added the or engaged in commercial agriculture to make sure we were actually trying to capture the universe of folks that would be engaged.
I get it. I think Senator Thompson's right, though.
It's broad.
There is some issues with that. I mean, that's going to be in the eye of the eye of the beholder, the eye of the whoever the law enforcement person is.
But it's better than current law.
It's better than current law.
Yeah. Okay. Mr. Chairman, if I may, I was going to make that point precisely. I appreciate Senator Thompson's concern about the amount of discretion. I would say under the current environment, there is no discretion. And our intent in introducing this bill was to make life easier for people that are engaged in agricultural practices and at the same time to protect animals. So I think that these compromises make the situation better, and that's why we're before you today.
Provides cover. Today you're probably breaking the law.
I don't have a dog.
Your brother.
Well, you certainly are breaking the law then.
Senator Thompson, if I could introduce you to the folks from the Oregon Humane Society, they can fix that for you this afternoon.
My wife has 11 barn cats, so that's my contribution.
Once you're tethered. All right. More on this, folks.
Let's go on.
Barn cats.
Anybody else have a question? Thank you very much.
Thank
That's
you.
All I have signed. Thank you, Representative. That's all I have signed up. Does anybody else wish to comment on House Bill 2687A? No one else? All righty. We will close the public hearing, open a work session on House Bill 2687A. Chair moves House Bill 20. Wait a minute, I got to move.
Got to do the
Chair
dash
moves
four.
The dash four the amendments dash four. To House Bill 2687A. Discussion on that motion.
I would just like to put on the record that this was an agreement that was reached, and I'll honor the agreement.
And specifically, that it does provide for agricultural exemption.
No, the agricultural exemption is the original bill.
Well, it sort of still has that there, but it doesn't apply to having a dog if you're in agriculture.
Yeah, okay.
Further discussion on that. Is there any opposition to the motion?
Yeah, I'm going to be a no for now. I might change my mind later.
On the amendment?
Oh, not on the amendment.
No,
well,
the
I don't
amendment
like that
should
either,
be.
So, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Do you want to be a no on the amendment?
No.
Okay. So the amendment's adopted. Chair moves House Bill 2687A, as amended by the dash floors, to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Discussion on that motion. No discussion. Opposition. Senator Thompson is opposed. Anybody else? The bill moves to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Senator Riley, would you like to carry it?
Sure, why not?
Okay. We'll close on that. And do we have anybody else in the room here?
Representative Reed is on his way.
All right. Well, we can do another one. Well, we can't move that one. And Reardon's not here. I guess we'll just stand at ease for a moment.
Is en route between the committee that he's on to now to this one.
So do we need to do anything with 2465? It's going to do not move.
Yeah, this is the one with the transportation relating clause.
Yeah.
So we can hear it.
I was going to say I didn't have a dog in that fight, but I just say.
Okay.
You lost your dog on the grate, but then I decided.
While we're waiting, let's just open a public hearing. We'll open a public hearing on 2465A. James.
Mr. Chair, committee members. House Bill 2465 authorizes the Department of Transportation to establish by rule a change of address requirements for driver's licenses, driver permits, and identification card, replaces requirement that applicant under 18 years of age provide proof of enrollment from school with requirement that parent or guardian certify that applicant is enrolled in school, except in cases where the applicant's privileges have been suspended for withdrawal from school, eliminates the moped restriction driver's license, removes requirement that out-of-state applicants for motorcycle endorsement take the motorcycle knowledge test in Oregon if the applicant already has such endorsement in another state. There are no amendments, no revenue impact, and has minimal fiscal impact.
Amy, welcome.
Thank you, Chair Beyer, members of the committee. Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation. James did an excellent job summarizing this bill. There are four really small items that DMV and ODOT have identified where we could get a little bit of efficiency in the area of driver licensing, ID cards, and permits. So I'll run through those real quickly. First is eliminating the moped restricted driver license. So this is a license that all it lets you do is operate a moped. You can get that if you're 16 years of age or older. We issue about 10 of these per year, maybe about 100 licensees on the books. For that sort of small benefit, we have to maintain an entire program around that. Test courses, test questions, training our field agents and phone agents about it so they can inform people. We just don't think that's a lot of bang for the buck, and so we propose to eliminate that license. If you have a standard Class C operator's permit, you can operate a moped legally, so there's still an avenue for folks who want to operate a moped. The second item is changing the specifics on how customers prove residence address when they're getting a license, permit, or ID card. The current law says that you must show a document, and that's been interpreted by DOJ to mean a physical piece of paper. In kind of our modern society, people have smartphones. The law allows you to show law enforcement officer your insurance card on a smartphone. So we think that that is a way we could improve upon that to allow people to show documents electronically. There are also address verification systems out there, third-party verification systems that DMV would perhaps utilize in the future to get towards proof of residence address. So we're asking for that small change. One point I want to make is that this does not in any way change the rigorous standards for proof of identity and proof of legal presence. It has nothing to do with either of those two things. The third item is making more efficient the way the state uses DMV to help ensure that teenagers stay in school. So under current law, DMV is used in two ways to that effort of keeping teens in school. One is that when a teen goes into DMV to get their permit or their driver license, they have to bring in a form that's been filled out by their school saying that they are a student in good standing. The other one is that if a kid drops out or has attendance problems, the school can notify DMV to suspend that person's license or ability to apply for driving privileges. So what the bill would do is change somewhat the way the sort of student in good standing proves to DMV that they're enrolled, and that is rather than bringing a form from the school, the parent is going to certify that they're a student in good standing. The problem that we find is that kids come in, their parent is with them, they fail to bring that form. Now DMV has to turn them away along with the parent, go back to school, get the form. If it's summer break or spring break, good luck. You're going to have to wait for a while. So we think this is a good way to keep the benefit of proving kids are in school, but get that efficiency for customers and DMV. The last item is the out-of-state motorcycle endorsement. So if a person moves to Oregon from out-of-state, they've already got a driver license with a motorcycle endorsement. Today, when they come into DMV, they have to take two knowledge tests, the Class C, kind of your rules of the road, but also a motorcycle knowledge test. It's quite basic. It's basically how to operate a motorcycle. We just don't think there's really value in that. If they had an endorsement in another state, they've already taken a training class or passed a test. They already know how to operate a motorcycle. If we get rid of that knowledge test, it saves us about 4,000 knowledge tests a year, and we'll get a little bit of savings there. So these are four items, not a huge kind of exciting bill, but a little bit of efficiency that we think we can do both for DMV and for our customers.
Cool. Questions? No questions? Well, Amy, this is a very interesting bill. I think we're going to hang on to it for a while.
Thank you for your consideration,
Chair. Thank
you very
much. So, is there anybody else who wishes to comment on House Bill 2465A? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing, and we will, where is Reeds here? We will open a public hearing on House Bill 2288A. James.
House Bill 2288A changes membership of Oregon Innovation Council, requires council to establish audit and accountability committee to monitor performance of council contracts, revises responsibilities and reporting requirements, declares emergency effective on passage. There are no amendments. There's no revenue impact and has a minimal fiscal impact.
Welcome, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, I'm Tobias Reed from Beaverton. We're happy to bring House Bill 2288 to you. Heather Stafford is here, the Assistant Director for Entrepreneurship and Innovation at the Business Development Department. I should disclose off the top that I'm an ex officio, non-voting member of the Innovation Council as a result of an appointment from the Speaker. Senator Johnson is also in that role from the Senate. And I think the Innovation Council is one of the very best things we have going in Oregon. It does a good job of connecting the cutting-edge research and development that happens at our institutions of higher education with the market. And this bill is fairly straightforward in that it's updating the structure and the membership of the council, doing some things that that are already the practice of the council in statute, making sure that there's an audit and accountability committee, which does now exist, putting that into statute. Increasing the frequency of the meetings, changing the or more tightly focusing the work of the council, recognizing the proposal for the Oregon Talent Council that's making its way through the legislature, and tightening the Innovation Council's focus on commercialization. And also tying us to an index or development of an entrepreneurial and innovation index so we can do a better job of tracking how we're doing relative to other states. Passed the House 57-0, and I hope it will pass the Senate as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
For the record, my name is Heather Stafford, Assistant Director of Innovation and Entrepreneurship at Business Oregon, and it's my pleasure to speak before the committee, Chair Beyer and Senate Committee. I don't have much to add. He did a pretty good job of summarizing. I just want to emphasize the increased alignment that we're seeing with Business Oregon and the Oregon Innovation Council, particularly with the creation of our Office of Innovation and Entrepreneurship, and some of these changes reflect that alignment. And we've had a great deal of success with the Innovation Council, and we just want to keep iterating and take it one step further.
Questions? No questions? Don't see any. So just basically, you're just increasing the membership by two.
And changing the some of the characteristics of who those people are, but it's, in general, I think that's right, Mr. Chair.
Cool. Any no questions? So thank you very much.
Thank
well, let's
you.
Get back to work, Representative. Is there anybody else who wishes to comment on House Bill 2288A? Seeing none, we will close public hearing, open a work session. Chair moves House Bill 2288A to the Senate floor with a do pass recommendation. Discussion on the motion. Quiet today. Is there any opposition to the motion? Seeing none, House Bill 2288A is moved to the Senate floor with a do pass recommendation by unanimous agreement, and the chair will carry. We'll close on that, and we'll move on down, and we will do open the public hearing on House Bill 2350A. James.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2350. A, updates and clarifies portion of Bank Act and related statutes, becomes operative January 1st, 2016, declares emergency effective upon passage. There is no revenue impact and no fiscal impact. We do have a -4 amendment, removes requirement for banks to apply and pay fee to Director of Department of Consumer and Business Services to open new branches, requires 30-day notification requirement to DCBS for opening new branches, enables DCBS Director to limit additional branches if new branches would adversely affect the banking institution's safety and soundness. On that amendment, there is no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Tim Martinez here on behalf of the Oregon Bankers Association and the Independent Community Banks of Oregon. I'm joined by Ken Sherman, Jr., our long time counsel of 30-plus years, I believe. We also have the DCBS up with us. Mm-hmm. I'd like to first of all thank the committee for hearing the bill. It did have two no votes in the House. Other than that, it was 55 yes and 3 excused. Last time we did a bill like this was 1997. I'm not sure who was here in 1997. Doesn't look, I don't think anybody was. You were in the House. at any rate, what we do about every 15 to 20 years is really gather together together a group of with Ken Sherman, bank attorneys, bank lawyers, and the department to kind of go through the entire Bank Act. And rather than do it in bits and pieces, we try to do it all in once. There's not a lot of policy in here. I think you do have Mr. Sherman's testimony as well as a section-by-section analysis. So depending on how long the chair wants to take, we could probably go to 3 o'clock on this because there is a lot of stuff in there. But, again, it's really not a lot of policy orientation. I know I'll just tell you there's nothing in here that we believe does any harm or really makes any changes to anything affecting any of our financial institution colleagues or other representative groups here in the Capitol. With that, we do have an amendment, and again, I want to thank DCBS. You heard a bill earlier this year talking about branching for credit unions. And as I was sitting in the back, a little light went off in my head and said, is that included in our omnibus rewrite? It wasn't. We were going to add this in the House. DCBS asked that we wait and have a conversation and talk about it, make sure we get the language right. We believe we've done that. We believe DCBS is now supportive of that. So with that, I'd like to turn over to Mr. Sherman, say a couple of words about the body of the bill, if that would be helpful to the committee.
Sure.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Ken Sherman, Jr., counsel for the Oregon Bankers Association. My testimony is in front of you, and I won't bore you by reading through it. As Tim has said, this bill really is a technical modernization of a statute that gets this treatment every 20 years or so. And I've tried in my testimony to identify what I thought were the main features of the bill. I can go through those, but just to highlight just a few, this bill would revise the rules regarding the names that are used by financial institutions to better coordinate that naming process and the regulations that go with it with what happens at the Secretary of State's office in naming non-bank entities. It would limit the incorporators of institutions to individuals. Now the law says that it can be persons, which includes other entities. And DCBS felt, and we agreed, that incorporators of banks ought to be human beings, at least when they start. It also provides that plans to compensate bank insiders with stock must be approved by the DCBS and also by two-thirds of the stockholders of the bank. Another section would enhance disclosures that are given to shareholders when the bank receives an order from one of its regulators to make sure that the shareholders are fully informed about the contents and the nature of such orders. It would require that the institution's audit committee be composed of at least 3 outside directors to make sure that we have an impartial group that is performing the audit. It deletes the requirement that rents that are payable under a personal property lease must exceed the bank's total expenditures, and it authorizes bank to refuse to pay a check where it suspects that the customer whose check is being presented is the victim of some sort of abuse or financial exploitation. Those are just a few of the highlights. As Tim has mentioned, the -4 amendments are wholly devoted to the subject of modernizing the rules that pertain to the branching of banks, and they are in tandem with the changes that are currently being made with regard to credit unions. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you for the opportunity.
What's the significance of narrowing the definition of trust business?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's a good question and one that we spent a lot of time on. Today, the definition in the Bank Act of trust business includes a whole bunch of activities, some of which involve a fiduciary who's actually appointed by a court. And while banks handle a large volume of the total so-called trust business throughout the state, there are lots of cases where people who aren't banks may perform those fiduciary duties if trust business is broadly defined. So we were running into cases where you might have even a family member for whom you were acting as a trustee or a custodian or something like that, and there was this question about whether were you a trust company and do you have to comply with all the rules that pertain to trust companies. And so we ran into that enough that we decided we really need to clarify that. And what we're trying to regulate in the Bank Act is bona fide trust companies. So this just shrinks that scope of regulation back to that group.
Okay. Ms. Martin?
Thank you, Chair Beyer and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Rick Blackwell, Senior Policy Analyst with the Division of Finance and Corporate Securities, the entity of DCBS that regulates the state chartered banks in Oregon. So we're comfortable with both the base bill and the Dash A4 amendment. I want to thank the OBA for working with us for the better part of a year to come up with something that we could bring to both the House and the Senate committee. And with that, I think I'll just turn it back over for any questions.
Okay. Questions to the panel? Boy, now that's as quiet as you've been in a long time.
You're always looking at me.
No question?
We're good.
Maybe just a comment. Wow. This group might pass a pro-banking bill today.
No.
We're having 20 years.
We have to wait.
All right. That's fine.
It's because we all like Tim.
Apparently, they're all satisfied. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Is there anybody else who wishes to comment on House Bill 2350A? Actually, it's a very good summary. All righty, we will close the public hearing, open a work session on House Bill 2350A.
Oh, you're good now?
Yeah, the paperwork came in. We're good.
And we will start out with moving the Dash 4, isn't it?
Yes.
Amendments to 2350A. Discussion on that motion.
You need to make a motion.
I just did. Did I not?
Yes, you did.
I did move. You weren't listening. There is a motion in front of us to incorporate the Dash 4 amendments to House Bill 2350A. Just to be clear, discussion on the motion. Is there any opposition to the motion? The Dash 4 amendments are adopted. The chair moves House Bill 2350A, as amended by the Dash 4s, to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Discussion on that motion. Is there any opposition to the motion? There is none. House Bill 2350A, as amended by the Dash 4s, is moved to the Senate floor with a do-pass recommendation. And Senator Girard, would you like to carry?
Well, this is one complex bill, as long as Steiner Hewitt doesn't ask a bunch of questions.
I cannot guarantee that, but you got it. We're in post. And let's see, we will open on House Bill 2625. James.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2625 creates the offense of unlawful parking in a space reserved for alternative fuel refueling. Designates offense as Class D traffic violation, punishable by a maximum of $100. There are no amendments, there is no revenue impact, and no fiscal impact.
Representative, welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair and committee. It's always a pleasure. I'm State Representative Jeff Reardon, District 48. And it's always a pleasure to come for a Senate committee. This is probably the easiest bill you will deal with all year. It costs nothing, and nobody has to do anything. It's the perfect bill. But it is important. At least, first of all, may I ask, are there any electric vehicle owners, drivers in here? No, Rod's not. I'm pretty sure Senator Thompson's not.
Golf cart.
Okay. Close enough. So this bill came to me from a constituent, a gentleman named Ken Bookstein. He's provided a picture that's on OLIS. And Ken was tired of seeing electrical vehicle charging stations filled with gas-powered vehicles. And I am an EV driver, and I will tell you that there's still quite a distance between EV charging stations in many locations. So it's not like if you can't get into one gas station, you can go to the next one on the next block, not so much on electric vehicle charging stations. So it can be pretty tough if you're running out of electricity and your battery
extension cord.
So benefits of electric vehicles, they're great for the environment, the economy, and Oregon families. Their smaller gas bill is easy for families, and it's very stable on their budget. EVs spur investment and growth along the West Coast, and there are no emissions, so they're much better for the environment. So we have been working to increase the number of charging stations so people can drive up and down the West Coast, and Oregon is a leader in that effort. But if you can't plug into one because they're constantly occupied, then that's the issue. So this simple bill allows for an enforcement mechanism when cars are improperly parked in EV stations. All it does is would allow a business owner to put a sign out citing the possible offense, sort of, I view it as a like a handicapped parking sign, that sort of thing. A store owner can do that if they've had, maybe they've had some complaints from their some of their customers. And that's pretty much as hard as I can make it for you this afternoon.
Thank you, Representative. Questions? Senator Riley?
Is it okay if I park my pickup truck behind those two cars that are in that spot?
Chair, Senator Riley, thank you for your excellent question. No.
Oh. Any others? I don't see any. Okay. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
Just for the record, is there anybody else who wishes to testify on House Bill 2625? Seeing none, we will close public hearing. We'll open a work session. Chair moves House Bill 2625 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Discussion on that motion.
And Mr. Chair?
Senator?
The good representative is my representative, so I'd appreciate the opportunity to carry this bill.
Well, we'll see. Is there anybody else? You threw me off here. Is there any other comment on this? Is there any opposition to this bill? There is none. House Bill 2625, no A this time, is moved to the Senate floor with a do pass recommendation by unanimous vote, and Senator Monroe wishes to carry.
We're being too easy on House members.
You know, you lucked out, Thompson. You were going to get this one. You had the only electric vehicle, apparently. Anything else today? Jessica, are we done? We're done. We're adjourned.
Good Thanks job. For getting me off the hook, Rod.
We're adjourned.
Good Thanks job. For getting me off the hook, Rod.
We're done.